John, it's James. Warm up the tires and turn up the engine because it's time to start the Outlap F1 podcast. From the Sports Talk Garage Network studio in Chicago to the best fans from around the world, join us every week for Formula One news, insights, race previews, and reviews.
Welcome, everyone, to episode number 2 of the Outlap F1 podcast. I'm John here with my co-host, James, here to talk some Formula One report card. How's it going, man?
It's good, man. Back in our natural element of the late night podcast.
Yeah, it was a little weird recording in the middle of the day last time, so glad to be back in our almost after midnight recording. So that's where we find our sweet spot, it seems like. But so, yeah, we're a third of the way officially through the season. It's gone by fast. Can't believe we're already at this point. So we thought before we get into another episode later this week of some preview stuff for the French Grand Prix, we thought, why don't we break down kind of how teams are doing, how drivers are doing, and sort of give our A to F rating of how they're doing this so far this year, and maybe talk some crap about a few guys along the way. So, James, I know you're our statistical guru over there, so I'll hand it off to you to kind of start diving into these, and then we'll give our ratings.
Yeah, that actually might have been a little foreshadowing when you said A to Z, because if we were rating people on their qualifying rankings, I think we could give Lance Stroll a Z. Probably a Z minus, to be honest with you. So sorry, Lance. But yeah, I will have good things to say about him later. Just a little foreshadowing for you. But I basically went through team by team. Did a little driver teammate battle rivalry setup here, going over a few different stats, whether it be their qualifying, who qualified ahead of the other more often, their qualifying time, the difference between the two, their average race start going into their average race finish, and whether that's, you know, adding places or dropping places on the grid. And then, of course, their points for the year. And then I added in the DNFs as well. So, let's get started here with Mercedes, your favorite squad. Pretty close battle so far this year. I think that we've all seen as far as qualifying goes. Lewis Hamilton holds a narrow edge right now, 4-3 on Bottas. Their time differential for qualifying, Lewis Hamilton right now is averaging 1:22.493. Bottas is right there at 1:22.522. So a real close difference there, just about 0.03 of a second. Hamilton, his average race start right now is 1.86, which pretty incredible considering we're 7 races in, and that's compared to Bottas, who isn't terrible, but a little bit behind him there at 2.43. He's starting off there. And then race finish, of course, Lewis Hamilton being leading the championship right now, he's pretty high up there at 1.29, and that's compared to Bottas at 2.14. So Lewis Hamilton's actually gaining half a place every race, and which is really incredible considering he starts within the top 2 spots just about every race on average there. And then, as we know already, Lewis Hamilton's leading the way with points, 162 to 133 for Bottas. Neither one of them has a DNF yet, but I'm still waiting for that elusive double DNF for Mercedes so the boys in red can come storming back. And I'm just going to keep my fingers crossed on that. But
yeah, it's going to take a miracle for that to happen, but anything's possible, I suppose.
Yeah, well, if he has Toto Wolff, it's right around the corner, so stay vigilant over there. So let's go into our gradings here, the typical A through F. And let's start with your boy, Lewis. I'm sure I know where this is going, but what grade do you got for your boy?
Yeah, I think we decided to – we obviously started easiest first, and then we'll head towards the crap end of the list or crap end of the grid in a little bit. Yeah, I think – I mean, Lewis is an easy A for me. Obviously, you know, other than that FP2, I think it was in Canada, where he ended up in the fence. That's really been the only mistake that he as a driver has made all year. So guy's been in incredible form the entire time. And honestly, it's hard not to give him an A. I think even for a homer, you know, I don't think too many people can give me crap about that. So Bottas is really the kicker. You know, when I was thinking about this, you know, as we kind of started talking about how we were going to play this out, I thought, honestly, like, Botas would be a little bit further down, a little bit as far as rankings go. And you surprised me and showed me that he's not. So I'm going to give Botas a B. I don't know about you. I feel like that's fair.
Yeah, no surprises there. I think I'm going to surprise you a little bit with my first one. Hamilton, I'm actually giving him a B+.
What?
I know it seems a little bit harsh, especially considering how well he's starting each race. But I think when you're possibly the greatest of all time, or at least in our generation, I expect the best out of you. And I think having only beaten Bottas 4-3 in qualifying so far, it's kind of a knock against him. And I just think he's better than that. So if he really wanted to prove himself and get that A, then he's going to have to pick that up here the rest of the way.
You know, he just wants a challenge, man, on race day. I mean, listen, he's got to have something to entertain himself on Sunday. So he's like, all right, well, you know, I'll start second. No big deal. I'll cruise around for a little bit. And Bottas will screw up a start. He'll spin the tires or whatever BS excuse he comes up with every week. And I'll cruise on by him, set the engine to 2 on the scale there, and then cruise on another 78 laps of victory. So. All right, well, I see what you're saying, but I think it's crazy.
All right, well, and then for Bottas, I'm giving him an A-. I think he's had a really good year so far. Started off a lot stronger than what he's been lately. But I know he usually goes through that mid-season kind of lull a little bit, but I don't think he's going to do that this year. I think he's going to come into every race having eaten his porridge and be ready to challenge Lewis throughout the year. And really, that's what I'm hoping for, at least, so that we have something close to watch besides just the midfield battle. So, hopefully we see some more good things from Bottas.
You know, I don't think I've ever actually eaten quote-unquote porridge, so we might have to do a little Twitter thing or something like that for one of our races, one of these early Sunday morning races, and dig out a porridge recipe and see how nasty that crap is.
Yeah, well, I didn't look at Sully House's menu too closely, but maybe they do have porridge on the menu.
Yeah, they should add that on there, but I'm going to guess I probably just offended half the entire world, so sorry if I offended your porridge people.
All right, so enough about the Silver Arrows. I think we're all sick of hearing about them. Let's move on to a real team now, and that being Ferrari and all their typical blunders when it comes to strategy. But today we'll talk about their head-to-head stats and a little bit bigger of a gap here in the qualifying stats for Sebastian Vettel and my boy Charles Leclerc. Vettel's actually got a huge margin on him. It's 6-1 so far on qualifying, which when you kind of at least for me, when I briefly thought about it, I was like, it's got to be pretty close. And then I kind of realized that Leclerc really only had that one good qualifying run. Of course, Ferrari's done a good job.
Where was that? Was it Bahrain that he had that good one at? I'm trying to think.
Yeah, Bahrain was when he set the fastest lap there in qualifying, and then was leading pretty much the whole race until had some engine troubles there.
Yeah, that number, that 6-1, shocks me too. I was the same way. I thought for sure they would be pretty close just based on kind of, I think, half the season it felt like Leclerc had the upper edge, and then it seems like things have flip-flopped a little bit back towards Vettel's way the last few races. But, yeah, so that surprised me.
Yeah, and kind of a bigger surprise to me, and I think I know why, but as far as their average qualifying time goes, Vettel's at a minute 22.779 with Charles Leclerc at 1:23.261. So that's almost a full half second difference. I think there's a little bit of noise in this stat though, because of what happened in Monaco with the blunder there during qualifying. Yeah. And trying to remember which the other race was it was Azerbaijan when Leclerc was actually looking pretty good and then ran into that wall there in that tight chicane. So a little bit of noise in that stat, I think, because I think it's actually a little bit closer than those if I would take away those two blunders. But at the end of the day, those things happen, so I got to include them in. So as far as race start goes, kind of the same issue there because Leclerc is showing at starting at 5.86, so in between fifth and sixth place on average, and Vettel's a little further up there at 2.71, so within the top three on average, which is to be expected, driving for Ferrari, one of the top two teams, and obviously he is one of the top drivers, even if sometimes I say otherwise. And then not surprising to me, Vettel's race finish is actually lower at 3.29, and Leclerc is up at 4.33. So Leclerc on average is gaining a place and a half, and Vettel's actually given a half place away per race. So that
Well,
kind
that's
of
what
goes to
happens
show.
when you cut chicanes and you get penalties and you spin out and crap like that. So, gotta take a dig there. But no, I think that makes sense. I think that's why it felt like they're so close together, because based on their average starts, and then you look at Vettel actually dropping a little bit off in during race pace, and Leclerc actually gaining a little bit. They're probably meeting pretty damn close to each other come race day. So I think that's why it probably felt so tight between them, even though the quality numbers are so drastically different. But points is a big one. Of course, Leclerc's Monaco wasn't great, and Bahrain, he got completely screwed out of that deal. So and we've talked on numerous occasions in prior episodes, in the former podcast, about strategy really screwing him over. So I think points wise, they really should be closer together as well. But what can you do?
Yeah, right now it's 100 for Vettel and only 72 for Leclerc, so not as close as I thought it was going to be. And really, neither one of them have as many points comparatively to Mercedes as I had hoped they would have at this point in the season, back in Spain during preseason testing. But it is what it is at this point. And just a quick note for anybody wondering, when it comes to the race finishes, like for now in Leclerc's case, he did have one DNF there in Monaco. I don't include that in when I do the average race finish. It's only for races that the driver actually completes. So I didn't gig them for those DNFs. Just a quick note on that. But moving into their grades, I feel like I was a little harsh on my boy Seb. Kind of had an up and down fandom relationship, I guess you can call it, with him this season. Little uneasy about him at times, and other times when he's switching the P2 sign over to the P1 sign. That really kind of made me chuckle and admire him a little bit there. But overall, I think on the season so far, I'm giving him a solid C. Definitely not where I expected him to be for the year. I mean, he's a four-time world champion. He's driving a Ferrari. I know they've had their issues this year, but I really should see more out of him. And it's just these mistakes he makes, especially with any kind of pressure on him. And like, I don't want to gig him for the stuff from last year, all the spins towards the end of the year, but like those really hang in my memory every time that you see him making these mistakes, whether it be, in Canada, cutting that chicane and then that whole mess. And then, there's little times throughout the year where it's just these little things that he does wrong, and it pisses you off, to be honest, And then on the other side, then Ferrari's screwing over Leclerc. So, what did you give Vettel?
Yeah, I think I gotta agree with you. Going gut instinct on that one, C was the first thing that popped in mind. I think he's, like you said before, that car's got issues, but I think he's underperforming to really what that car is capable of, and it goes down to mistakes. When there's pressure there, we've already hashed out the penalty from last week, and as the entire world has as well, but regardless of that, you take away the penalty or not, however you want to look at that, he still made a freaking mistake. He still felt pressured from Lewis behind and braked too late, locked it up, and went through the grass. So, Lewis, you can't put that on Lewis. You got to put that 100% on Vettel, and that's just kind of been the tale of the last two seasons. Is when push comes to shove, he's just not quite performing there. So, yeah, I think C's a fair grade, just given everything in mind.
For sure. And then for Leclerc, this one was a little tough for me because I feel like if it would have been like three races into the year, I would have given him an A without a doubt. And I know a lot of what's happened hasn't been on him directly. Some of it's the team strategy, some of it's the car itself, like we mentioned in Bahrain. But I'm giving Charles a B minus here. I think there's been places he's could have done a lot better, and there's been times he's looked like the world beater I think he is, like in Bahrain, he dominated that race until he had the engine issue. So I think a B minus is fair for him right now. I'd like to give him more just because I'm biased, but I just can't give him any higher than that grade right now.
No, I mean, my initial thought was I was kind of landing somewhere in that B I don't know. A part of me wants to give him like a C plus just because of the Monaco mistakes. He really unfortunately looked like a rookie in Monaco, getting pissed off and putting his car where it really should not belong, and then obviously making the mistake and then compounding that mistake by aggressively trying to get back to the pits and just destroying the car in the process. And then obviously in Baku, you got to put that 100% on him as far as ending up in the fence. So it was a weird
That's a good
situation. He
point.
braked late, but so I feel like, and again, even though it was stat wise, Vettel was having a better year. I feel like when you look at the grand picture and you look at the strategy calls and things like that, I think if we give, I want to give him a little bit better rating than I give Vettel because the team has honestly been against him so far this year. So yeah, I'm gonna land like a C plus on there. Still better than Vettel, but maybe a couple of dings in there just because of Monaco and Baku.
Definitely. I see what you're saying there for sure. I think we agree on that one. Just a little bit off there between the C plus and the B minus. All right, so moving on. I'm getting away from these top two teams now. Let's go into Red Bull.
This one's interesting.
Oh yeah.
This is when you start seeing the quite a gap here.
Yeah, talk about blowing somebody's doors off here. Max Verstappen is I mean dominating Pierre Gasly. It's not even close. Qualifying is 6-1. I had forgotten that Gasly had one on him. I thought for sure this was going to be a 7-0, but there is actually only one of those that we'll get to in a little bit. But I couldn't even remember what race it was. I saw the stats come up. I was like, there's no way that Verstappen ever finished behind Gasly. I was like, how is this even possible, you know? And then I remembered it was just his last race, and I was like, nah, I just kind of feel like an idiot. But that was kind of, I'm going to blame that one on K-Mag for slapping into the wall of
Yeah, that's a good
champions and then
point.
kind of
Verstappen got
ruined
screwed on
qualifying
that whole
there.
deal. Now, granted, he should have gotten through probably on the mediums, but again, yeah, I don't want to put that too much on Verstappen. It's just even he said it. Things like this happen in F1. Or what can you do? You just gotta move on and try to make the best of it. So.
Yeah, and like Pierre Gasly had, you know, the lap of his year basically in Canada or his qualifying of the year. And that's what he had to do to get in front of Verstappen, really. And then obviously get a mistake by another driver that kind of screwed over Verstappen. So when you look at their qualifying time differential, Verstappen's at a solid 123.147 with Gasly trailing him at 123.663. So over half a second difference there on the average qualifying time. So that's a pretty big difference there. It's a huge gap in their average race start. Verstappen starting just inside the top five at 4.86, and Gasly's on the outside of the top 10 at 10.71. As far as finishing goes, Verstappen good at moving up the grid there during the race. He's finishing in the top four at 3.86. So that's a full place ahead of where he starts. And then Gasly, one as far as how many places he gains during a race because he finishes on average at 8.71. So he averages 2 places ahead of where he starts. I think that's obviously more of a picture of how bad he qualifies and where he starts on the grid when you take a look at his Red Bull compared to some of the other midfield cars that he's obviously way better than just the vehicle he's driving, you know. And then points is a huge gap there. Verstappen looking good with 88 and Gasly all the way down at 36. So I don't think I didn't really have any surprises there. I don't know about you, but Max is kind of controlling that for sure.
I had surprises, but not in the way you probably think. I was like, I knew it was bad, but this is really bad. Like it was worse than even I anticipated. 6-1 quality, to be in a freaking Red Bull and your average start is outside of the top 10. That's unacceptable. Barely getting into the points on average. And then home place getting blown out by what, 52 points, difference between the two seasons. So yeah, that was one of my big shockers I knew it was bad, but damn, it's unacceptable that you can be in a car, and I know the car has had issues, and I know that They started a little light on aero, thinking that Honda may be a little weak on power, and they've had to make some adjustments. And I know that Toro Rosso is a different team and in a different factory than the factory Red Bull, but still, I mean, damn. Look here.
Yeah, like
So.
I you had to figure there was going to be some growing pains there for Gasly coming into the big time there with the real Red Bull team, but yeah, I mean, he has just really struggled more than I anticipated. It seems like, especially in Canada, he had a really good weekend. So we'll see. It seems like he's starting to build and get comfortable. Maybe it'll be too little too late. But I think Red Bull, earlier in the year, I thought there was a chance that they were going to dump him mid-season, but they always say the right things about him. So I think they'll hold on to him all year, and then we'll see if he gets stronger as the year goes on.
Yeah, I mean, silly season is in full swing, that Hulkenberg rumor and all that stuff going on. But so for ratings, I almost want to give him a D for damn, but I think and I'm interested to see what you give Verstappen based on how you compared his grading with Hamilton. But at least 7 races in, and granted, Montreal was a little bit better, but I almost want to give him an F, man, because,
Wow.
yeah, I mean, it's just when you think, and granted, it's different season, different tire, different aero, et cetera, but when you think that Verstappen's first drive in a Red Bull factory team and he wins the damn race, and then you see how long we're 7 races in, and maybe Gasly's starting to figure it out, maybe. I don't know. The kid looked pretty good last year. I thought he would come in, and I didn't think he would, keep up with Verstappen, but I thought it would be decently close. So I don't know. I definitely can't give him any better than a D for damn. And I really want to give him an F for, other words. But I'll stick with D. I'll be nice based on Montreal, and I'll go D for damn. And then Verstappen, I think I got to go with an A to match Lewis. I think he's outperforming that car. If the car was a little bit better, or if he was in a different package, I think this guy's he's gonna be a world champion one day. It's just a matter of what year and what team it's gonna be with. So
For sure.
the level of maturity has been through the roof comparative to where we were, this time last year even. So the guy's really honed in on that leadership role, at least on the surface. And so, yeah, I got to give him an A for our boy Max.
Yeah, 100%. For Gasly, I think I got a case of recency bias with him. I gave him a C, and
Wow.
I think a I think and I know. I was kind of surprised at myself as I was going over these again before we started the podcast. And I was like, wait, that can't be right. But I think he's shown the ability to get better, race by race, I think overall. And I see better times ahead for Gasly. I really do. I think he's starting to figure it out. And, he's just too good of a driver to be that bad for that long. So hopefully he gets it figured out and continues this upward trend that he seems to be on as of late. And then with Verstappen, I mean, he got my highest grade of any driver on this list. A plus plus plus, however many pluses you want to give him. I mean, he's driving the dang wheels off that car. He's outperforming what he has. And I mean, like you said, his level of maturity has grown leaps and bounds, and I mean he's the total package right now. He's like, Charles Leclerc, I always talk about as my favorite driver, but it's like Max Verstappen's right there. Like last year, I wasn't too sure about him because I was like, eh, he's kind of a little immature. He's kind of a dick, to be honest, And I wasn't sure, but then this year, it's just like, man, this guy's good, and he knows he's good, and he's fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, there's two drivers that we'll talk about on the grid that I think when we do this similar type review in 7 races time, which actually won't be that far away considering that we've got some back-to-backs coming up. But Gasly and Kvyat are the two that, one, I'll be interested to see where they compare, and two, will either one of them or both of them still be in the seat that they are in now? So I'm gonna go a little crazy and think that I don't know, things might get interesting in the Red Bull. They've shown that they're not afraid to make an in-season change before, so we'll see if that happens again. But yeah, I'm a little surprised that you gave Lewis a B plus and Verstappen an A plus 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 plus. But I agree with Verstappen. I think he's performing incredibly well. And there's that rumor floating around about him right now that I guess he has supposedly an out clause with his contract, that if Red Bull isn't performing at the level that he feels satisfactory, that he theoretically could walk after this season. I don't know where the hell he would go based on contracts, but I could see a team making a seat for him if that were to ever happen. Probably very, very unlikely, but yeah, I guess
Yeah,
anything's possible.
I've heard that too, and it's like it's fun to think about, but when you really start giving it thought, it's like, does Ferrari sign him and then have Leclerc and Verstappen? It's like I don't know if that would work out too good.
No,
I know him.
that seems like a match made in hell, honestly. And that's the thing, you like Mercedes, either you can't have a Lewis and Verstappen, that's gonna go bad, and then
Yeah, Lewis wouldn't allow that.
right, so there's your top two teams, unless he pulls a Danny Ric and goes to Renault or something crazy and reunites, and I definitely can't see that happening. So I think anything honestly would be a downgrade based on what drivers are already in those teams. Now, if Leclerc walks and or something stupid happens with that, then I could shuffle the whole damn world up. But yeah, silly season. I love silly season.
Oh yeah, me too. And it's like, 'cause the only way I could see him leaving is if a couple other major moves happen. So,
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to keep an eye on that for sure.
So who do we got next? We're moving on
Let's
to
see.
our your newest fan club, McLaren, I think.
Yeah, my growing love for McLaren. So this was a close battle, which I expected, between Lando Norris and Carlos Sainz. Qualifying battle is neck and neck. Lando's actually got the slight edge there, 4-3. Qualifying differential, Lando's at a 1:24 point 018. Sainz at 1:24.402. So Lando's got him by almost 0.4 at 0.384. So of course then Lando's starting a little bit better, just inside the top 10 at 9.8, and Sainz just outside the top 10, or a little bit outside, I should say, at 11.43. So when you look at the race finish, they are basically identical, with Sainz being 9.20 and Lando at 9.25. So obviously Sainz moves up the field more often, and Norris kind of goes backwards a little bit, over just over half a spot back per race. And then their points are pretty close. Sainz at 18, Lando at 12. And then, unfortunately, their DNFs are pretty high. Sainz has a couple, and Lando's got three to his name. So, give me some quick hits here for McLaren. What do you got?
So this is a tough one. Obviously, when we started talking about this, we decided that we would grade everyone based on the curve of considering what car they're in and what kind of package they actually have to support them. So instead of comparing them to necessarily other drivers and different equipment. So I think I'm going to give it, given that they're in the McLaren and stayed in McLaren last year, I think the Papaya boys are happy with their driver. I think if Alonso wanted to come back, I don't think it'd be McLaren, because I think they found a good niche. Norris is cool as hell. He's got to be the king of Twitter.
Oh, 100%.
So ever since you mentioned him a while back, I've been following him, and the boy cracks me up. Just such a good personality.
Yeah,
Fun
he just
kid
had
to
a new one
watch.
I saw. He had a new one I saw last night, the running one of him hopping out of his McLaren in Monaco, and then he's running all over these crazy places. It's pretty funny. You'll have to check it out. And you brought up my boy Zach Brown. The quote of him with Alonso, I don't know if you saw that, but somebody asked him, what he'd do if Alonso wanted to come back to McLaren. And he said, I could only see that happening if we were allowed to have three cars on the grid. And I thought that was pretty interesting, pretty
Yeah,
telling.
I think that was telling. Yeah, to your, exactly. I think they're happy with Sainz, and it's hard to not be happy with Norris. The kid's impressing in his first year, so I'm gonna give both these guys a B. I think the season could be better, but I've been impressed with both of them. I'm very impressed with Norris. Obviously, Montreal hurt a little bit, up in the points, and having one of the weirdest suspension failures that I've ever seen in my decade or so plus of Formula One. So, but yeah, I'm gonna go B for both these guys.
I think you're just a tough grader, is what I'm getting from this. I expected more from you with your boys in McLaren. So, for me, I'm giving Carlos Sainz a solid A. You know,
Nice,
he
nice, nice.
right at, as of right now, a third of the way in, he's best of the rest as far as drivers go with 18 points, just ahead of Danny Ric there, who's got 16. So, I think he's doing really well as a leader type role. With Lando behind him, I'm giving Lando a B plus because I think he's really excelling. He's a lot of fun to watch, and I mean besides Zach Brown here and there, Lando Norris is probably the main reason why I'm really starting to like McLaren, and I can't help it. You know, he's a good kid, he's fun to watch, and I like the color orange, I guess. So maybe that's a big part too. But it's a fun team. I see good things coming. I've been seeing rumors lately that they're almost kind of threatening that they won't be around if they don't like the 2020 regulations and all that, but and like focus on the WEC and that kind of stuff. But it'd be kind of weird to not have a McLaren team in Formula One. So hopefully none of that is accurate and it's just kind of them talking a big game, thinking they have Ferrari type power right now, which I don't think anybody does besides Ferrari for whatever strange reason. But yeah, so A for Sainz and a B plus for Norris.
Nice. Okay, fair enough.
Right, so who we got next here? Well, probably my least favorite team, the old Frogs. Renault, Danny Ricciardo, and Nico Hülkenberg of Red Bull rumor fame lately. This one, this is what I like to see because I'm a bigger fan of Ricciardo for sure. But he's dominating in qualifying as he should, 6-1 right now. Time differential, decent gap. Ricardo's at 1:23.984. Hülkenberg at 1:24.340. So Ricardo's got him by about 3.5 tenths. He's obviously then starting higher up inside the top nine at 8.86. Hülkenberg all the way down at 12.71. So
Ouch.
that's pretty rough for a team that had ambitions to be best of the rest. And I mean, they are knocking on the door right now. So Ricardo moves up about a third of a place to 8.5. And then Hülkenberg moves up almost two spots a race because he's starting pretty much out of position on average every race. And he finishes in 10.8. And then the points are pretty close. It's 16 for Ricardo and 12 for Hülkenberg. And then the DNFs are kind of killing Renault, three for Ricardo and two for Hülkenberg, most famously when both cars died at the same turn in epic fashion, which one of my highlights of the season so far.
Same turn, same lap. I thought I was seeing double.
Yeah.
Like, what are the odds that both of them at the same damn corner? But yeah, it's shocking that with everything that's happened with Renault this year, they're only 2 points out of fourth place, so 2 points out of the best of the rest. So McLaren's got some competition. But yeah, you're right. Reliability has hurt Renault. Obviously, Ricciardo had that fluke incident in Australia, lap one before he even got to turn one. His race was over. So it's tough. I like to see, Hülkenberg. There's a lot of Hülkenberg fans, and I think Hülkenberg gets more credit than he deserves. And I think that this stat here is 6-1 and average, race starts. Pretty drastic difference there, pretty significant difference in race finish. Taking into account everything with the Renault, geez, I'm gonna go Danny Ric as a B, maybe somewhere in there,
Okay.
and Hulk, I can't give him anything more than a C. I don't want to go. I feel like it's a little bit better than a D. I don't think he's quite at Gasly's level as far as disappointment. But yeah, I'm gonna go D for Danny Ric and C for Hulk.
All right, fair enough. I'm not too far off. Danny Ricciardo, I'm giving him a B minus. Didn't feel right giving him a full B. I'm kind of, I almost thought about giving him a C to be honest, because I thought he'd be better than this. But then I thought back, you know, he's kind of learning a whole new team, you know, and a whole new car, most importantly. And it seems like lately, the last few races, maybe Renault's kind of fitting the car better to work with what Ricciardo likes to do, and get him what he needs to be successful. So I think he's going to finish a lot stronger than he started for sure. You know, he's a professional, hell of a driver, amazing passer. So he's definitely going to get better as the year goes on. And then with Hülkenberg, I gave him a solid C. You know, I don't kind of like you were saying, I don't see what makes this guy like a thing really. Like, a lot of people talk about him as being really good and possibly going to Red Bull. And I've even seen a couple of crazy rumors about him possibly going to Ferrari and all that. But I just don't see it with him, you know. Maybe it's just that like smug look on his face I don't like. Or his, you know, little thing with K-Mag. I'm more of a K-Mag guy. But I'm not giving him anything over a C.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point. So when we first started talking about doing this episode, immediate first thought was I had Danny Ric as a C. And then when I saw the comparison between the two and realized just how I did not realize to what degree he had been beating Hülkenberg. So when I saw your stats, that I was like, damn, that bumps me up a letter grade just because of the fact that. And a guy that, you know, supposedly is a top talent and, you know, Ferrari quality in an equal competition. You know, he's really blowing the waters or blowing the doors off Hulk. So, yeah, I think Hulk has been the disappointment. I think Renault as a whole, though, you know, they've got that the Conrad issue fixed, knowing now that, you know, they were basically running at essentially like 75% of their power for almost all seven races so far this season. That really goes to show you just probably how underpowered they were, and obviously that was detrimental to at some of these tracks like China and Bahrain, Baku. You know, we've had some big, really big power tracks so far this year. So, I think we're spot on both of those.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be really interesting. Like you said, Renault's kind of figured out some of their issues. You know, with Renault's home race here coming up in a couple of days, they're really going to want to put on a show for the fans. So I really see them putting the pressure on McLaren here, moving forward. Hopefully, McLaren can hold them off for a while and keep things interesting for us as fans.
Cool. All right. Well, let's take a quick break since we covered the top five. Let's thank our sponsors who help put the Outlap F1 out there and help make it a possibility for us to talk about the sport we love. So let's give them the credit they deserve, and we will be right back after this quick break.
All right, so welcome back. We're going to continue our countdown here of the teams and the teammate battles, and as we give each driver their mid-season grade here, a third way into the season. And now we're on the sixth place team currently in the constructors standings, that being Force India. And of course, by Force India, I mean Racing Point. And literally during that break, I kept telling myself, don't say Force India. And of course, I just did. So my bad on that one.
You and Crofty, man. Neither one of you can get that crap right.
Yeah, my bad. But Racing Point, okay, got it. Kind of an interesting battle here between Sergio Perez and our favorite Lance Stroll. Complete and utter domination as far as qualifying goes for Sergio. He's up 7-0. That is the biggest margin on the grid. That being pretty obvious since he hasn't lost a single qualifying to Lance. Kind of hard to lose to a guy who can't seem to get out of Q3, but I think we've chronicled that well enough throughout our time together. So their qualifying time differential, pretty big gap there. Perez at 1 minute 24 seconds, 0.249. Lance Stroll being at 124.820. So over a half second, almost 6 tenths there. Obviously, the race starts a pretty big gap. Sergio Perez starting about 12.43. Lance Stroll outside of the top 16 at 16.14. And then here's shouldn't be too much of a shock because we know how good Lance Stroll is in the actual races, part of that being out of position just about every race. But Sergio Perez is finishing races and just outside the top 10 at 10.86, so he's moving up a spot and a half on average. And then Lance Stroll is finishing just outside the top 11 at 11.5, and he's moving up over 4.5 at 4.64. That is by far and away the most movement by any driver, up or down, really, especially moving up places. And as we've kind of talked about, you know, he's a good race day guy, terrible qualifying guy. Always seems to find that good race pace and moves up throughout the field. And obviously, a big part of that is that he starts out of position. But I'm going to give credit where credit's due, and he is a good driver on Sundays. And then, of course, the points. Sergio Perez having 13 and Stroll with 6. And then Stroll does have the sole DNF for racing points. So, you see any surprises there?
So this was tough for me because, you know, so much of modern day Formula One is qualifying. It's what you do on Saturday to set you up for Sunday. And then, you know, I don't, neither one of us particularly like it. I know a lot of people don't like that so much of the weekend is set on Saturday, but it's the state we're in and it is what it is. So, it's hard for me to give Lance a lot of credit for his race day performances, which are, like you said, statistically speaking, he has the most overtakes on average of any driver on the grid. But if you look at his race finishes on average, he's still outside the points as his average finish. And the only reason that is because the boy can't qualify to save his freaking life. And daddy's money doesn't buy you Saturday race day performance. So, it's tough though because yeah, I want to give him credit for Sunday, but you know he screws himself 11 races in a row now on a Saturday performance. So I think I'm going to be generous and give him a C minus. I kind of want to go a little bit lower than that, but if his race day performances were as terrible as his Saturday performances, he'd be getting at least a D, maybe my first official F. But I'm going to go C minus because he does recover well from his god-awful Saturdays.
Yeah, we're actually right on the head with me there. Lance Stroll, I'm giving him a C minus for pretty much all the same reasons you just detailed there. You know, he's a great Sunday guy and a terrible qualifier, so I don't see how I can give him any better because you in today's Formula One, you got to be the total package and you really got to bring it on Saturdays, and he just doesn't. So it's unfortunate for him, but that C minus sounds just about right for our boy Lance.
And then on the flip side of the garage, Perez is tough because I feel like he hasn't got a whole lot of tension so far this year on race days. He's kind of just been, you know, sort of there in the shadows, not doing terrible, not doing great. So it's been he's a more of a difficult one for me to grade than Lance, who maybe gets a little bit more media attention because of the shenanigans that happen with his dad's bank account. So, I don't know. I want to say, based on overall performance, the fact that on race day they finish actually pretty close together points wise, they're not too far apart. You know, it's we're talking about basically one race between them, a couple of points. So I'm gonna give Perez a C. You know, a part of me wants to get a little bit better than that, but. And I know they're having issues there, and things seem to be kind of hush hush on what all issues are going on there. You know, they get more money, but performance goes down. And we've kind of talked about that in past episodes that we think it's going to take a while for that cash influx to really make a big difference. And I know Daddy Stroll is buying a lot of new equipment and, you know, kind of getting them back to where they should have been. They were probably outperforming in prior years based, you know, than what they should have been based on their budgets. So it's going to take time to see what that team is actually capable of, but I want to do like a B minus C plus kind of range. I don't know. What are you thinking there?
Yeah, like same. It's a really tough one because when you see somebody dominating a teammate 7-0, you want to give them a good grade because, you know, they're getting the most out of their car, and obviously they have the same car. But then you think about who he's qualifying against, and it's like you can't weight that too much for, in his favor. And then you look at his race results overall, and his highest finish was a sixth in Azerbaijan. So he had a good day that day, but that was 8 of his points, and he's only got 13 points total. So we're talking well over half of his points coming from one race, which was a good weekend. But then that just means a lot of his other races were outside of points and low points. So he's a really tough one. I'm still going to give him a B because I think he's clearly the better driver with the same car when you compare him just to his teammate.
That's for sure.
But it'd be real hard for me to justify giving him anything above just a nice solid B.
What's honestly more shocking than all this to me is that the fact that somehow they're still in sixth place.
Yeah.
And they actually were in fifth place before Montreal. So again, Lance screwed the team, and starting from the back doesn't help matters as far as, helping your race day performance. But he had a decent day in his home track on Sunday, but the fact that, I guess, that just goes to show you just how tight the best of the rest is. That a team that neither one of the guys are, doing that well, are still very, very much in striking distance. They're only, what, 9 points out of fifth place. So, any race could swing things drastically from one end to the other, from like, what, five through or four through nine, basically.
Yeah. And I think I'm wondering though if them being in sixth speaks less to them, earning that sixth and more to the fact that Haas has been such a disappointment. And then really, Alpha we expected more out of than what they've done. So
Yeah, I think you
yeah.
bring up a good point. I think they've been more blessed with that six than probably what's actually been, deserved and earned on track.
Yeah, for sure. And they're going through a lot of changes. I wonder how much time and effort and money they're putting into developing this year's car compared to maybe next year's or even trying to get ready for 2021. I know they're building a new factory and all that, so I'm sure they're not putting too much of an effort on this year's results and this year's car. So I know typically Racing Point's been known as the team that can make the most out of the least and kind of develop well throughout the year. So we'll see if that trend continues, but I kind of see them floundering and finishing in like a seventh or an eighth, maybe in the constructors when it's all said and done.
Yeah, very likely. Who's let's
Yeah.
see, so we move it on to, let's see, seventh place with our boys, other boys, in bull. So Toro Rosso, how you got the standing?
Yeah, this one, a third of the way through the season, a little bit of a surprise for me from them. Being in seventh place, and I definitely think they've earned every bit of that seventh place. Impressed with both drivers for sure. A little bit bigger of a gap than I would have thought as far as their qualifying goes, with Kvyat having five and Albon only with two. Seems a lot closer than that, and that kind of shows in their qualifying time differential, with Kvyat being a minute 22.512 and Albon being at a minute 22.656. So under 2 tenths of a difference between the two. Race starting, Kvyat's just outside the top 10 at 10.43. Albon outside the top 12 at 12.86. And then race finishes, Kvyat just inside the top 10 at 9.6, and Albon just outside the top 10 at 10.5. So Albon's making a way bigger jump throughout the race, gaining just over 2 places on average at 2.36, and Kvyat gaining just under a place at 0.83. So I think both have been quality drivers. Only have 10 and 7 points, being Kvyat with 10 and Albon with 7. Part of that being some DNFs. Kvyat's got 2 and Albon's got the 1. So I'm super impressed with both drivers overall. Kvyat, I heard about this torpedo guy. I didn't know what to expect, and early in the year he kind of was, fitting the billing there. But Albon, I mean, you hear about this English kid who I guess, races as the under the Thailand flag. But if you hear him talk, he just sounds like another English guy. But he's impressed me throughout the year, and I really like him. I like what he does on the track, so he's been fun to watch.
Yeah, I think I agree in all that. Albon's been fun. He was the guy that I didn't really know a whole lot about coming into the season. And I know, there's been rumors that Toro Rosso has played guinea pig a little bit for Honda, and maybe that's kind of hurt things a little bit as far as their race day performances and kind of qualifying. But Kvyat has the edge in qualifying, but like you said, they're actually pretty tight both on qualifying day performance and race day performance. It usually looks like kind of back to back drivers, which would make sense being that they're in equal equipment. So I don't really know why, but my gut tells me like a B plus and Kvyat B minus. Just I feel like Albon had the biggest leap. Kvyat's obviously had multiple stints in F1 cars before. So this is not his first rodeo versus Albon making the jump from F2, which is a bigger jump than I think a lot of people give them credit for, with aero package and a hell of a lot more horsepower and torque. And, just that car is a hell of a lot more of a beast than an F2 car will ever be. So the fact that they're pretty even on pace, that's why I grade Albon as maybe having a slightly better, more at least from a morale standpoint, a little bit better of a year.
Yeah, for me, I've got Albon actually at an A minus. Like I said, he's impressed me all year. He was the least touted of the rookies coming in this class, and I think he's really proved himself and shown that he deserves this spot in Formula One, and he earns his place on the grid every race weekend. So I'm giving him the A minus there. I think he's done a great job. Kvyat, I actually gave him a B plus plus because I thought long and hard about giving him an A minus. But I can't give the torpedo anything above a B. So I'm throwing him an extra bone there and giving him the plus plus. I think he's done a great job. He's actually shown a little bit more maturity than I expected from him. He can definitely have some nice overtakes as he's had throughout the year. Impressed me a few different times on the track. So he could potentially be one of those guys that, especially the early rumors when Gasly was struggling really bad, that Gasly was going to be out and Kvyat was going to be in to finish the year at Red Bull. Whether we see that or not so sure. If it was up to me, I'd be rooting for Albon to get that shot, even though that'd be a really good test for his testicular fortitude, to see if he could handle that kind of jump and that kind of spotlight within the midst of a year. But either way, it'd be interesting to see if either one of those guys gets the call up to the big squad next year.
Yeah, and that's tough for Albon because if that move ever happened, that could very quickly either make or break his entire career. You
100%,
put
yeah.
him next to a guy that's, as we just documented, well outperforming the capabilities of that car currently. If he gets blown out the way, out the door, like Gasly's been, suddenly we're starting to question, oh man, does he really have it? Can he handle it? Does he deserve it to be an F1? Suddenly the media jumps on him. And I don't expect him to beat Max, but if he keeps up with Max, if he contributes to the team, if he finishes solidly in the points and in the same general region as Max, then suddenly people are saying, oh damn, well, we've got something special here. So it could easily go one way or the other. But I think Albon and Max together, I think they would complement each other. I don't know. I could see Albon being kind of like a Kimi situation, being a solid wingman, at least early on, maybe the first couple of seasons, and being that corporate boy and contributing to the big picture.
Yeah, that's a really good point, actually, because I could see them being really good teammates. Albon's kind of cool and calm, collected. Seems like a pretty chill dude, And he really caught my eye. It was in Bahrain. He had a top 10 finish. And then it was China when he crashed out there. Didn't even get to qualify, if I remember correctly. And then started from the pit lane and ended up with a point, in the top 10 in China. I thought that was really show what he was made of, and that was kind of what really sparked my interest in him and me following him a little bit closely,
Yeah, and the,
more
and
closely.
these numbers are a little bit skewed too because they didn't really talk about it much in the race broadcast. But wasn't it Albon that got his wing ripped off in that turn one, lap one at Montreal, I think, that ended up in Grosjean's lap. So it,
Oh yeah.
you know, it to me, that was a 100% racing accident. I don't think the kid had anywhere to go, and the guys around him had nowhere to go. It was just one of those things where it was just not enough space for too many cars. So, I don't really fault him for that. I don't deem that. I think it's just one of those things that just, you know, crap happens, and he just happened to be the victim of the day. So that obviously drastically skewed his points, as he ended up retiring that car early. So they're actually a little bit even tighter if he would have finished that race in the points.
Yeah, definitely.
So who's so I was gonna say who's next, but it's our the boys in the red, white, and blue, Old Glory. The drivers that are the team that we want to love, but make the man they make it difficult to love sometimes. But
They really do.
eighth place Haas, 16 points again. The best of the rest, you know, come France Grand Prix, Grosjean maybe not suck one time in his home race, and shoot, they could be in fourth place before you know, the blink of an eye. So anything could happen. But what's the stat saying on Haas?
Well, pretty much what I expected. Not too much of a surprise for me. K-Mags beat him in qualifying 5-2. Race or the qualifying time differential rather. Magnussen with a minute 23.789. Grosjean coming in at minute 24.064. So K-Mags got him by close to 3 tenths there. Then of course the race start. Magnussen's just inside the top 10 at 9.57. Grosjean at outside the top 10 at 10.71. Of course, he might tell you that he could be inside the top 10 if it wasn't for K-Mag crashing in front of him in Canada, but that's something Grosjean would cry about for sure. And then Magnussen is, I believe, the biggest drop back in terms of where he finishes races. He's almost all the way back at 12th at 11.86, so he's losing just over 2 places a race. And Grosjean finishes just outside of the top 11 at 11.25, so he's also losing half a place. So that's a really bad sign for the Haas guys, that both drivers are actually losing places throughout the race, especially considering they're starting right around 10th place. So definitely expected a lot more out of them coming into the year. Very disappointed so far. And those 16 points you mentioned, K-Mag's got 14 of them. Grosjean, the veteran of, I mean, I don't even know how many years and races this dude's got, but to have 2 points 7 races in a car that it's, I mean, I know they've had some brake issues. He's been complaining about brakes, I think, the whole time he's been at Haas, but they got the Ferrari motor, they got the speed, it's just they can't get it all together.
It's weird that, I mean, and Ferrari struggled in this regard as well, as far as tire temps and keeping the tires in the proper range. But to get as many parts from Ferrari as they're getting, it's a little shocking that, you know, they're struggling to the level they are, and that they somehow can't put things together. You know, tires changed from last year. We had a little bit of aero change, but of all the teams that those changes impacted, I think Haas has probably been one of the top one or two teams that have kind of felt that the most impactful in the negative way. So this one's hard for me, because I know that car is really sucking right now, and Gunter, you know, I'm starting to like him more and more and more every race weekend. I like that he told K-Mag to shut the hell up last week, and I kind of wish he'd do the same with Grosjean, because every time boy gets passed, even if it's the
Oh,
cleanest pass
that'd
on
be great.
earth, he radios in, oh, you know, they squeezed me, they bumped me, they looked at me weird when they passed me. I don't know. He's always got something to bitch and moan about. It drives me crazy. So, but I know the
He is a
car's
Frenchman.
pardon to all the French listeners, but yeah, we exclude Grosjean from the rest of the country. So, but yeah, this one's tough for me. Because again, I know the car sucks, and Gunter's been vocal about it being, you know, garbage. I guess I would give Magnussen a C-, and
Okay.
I'm gonna give Grosjean a D plus. I don't know. Like, I could give worse on both, but I feel like F is too harsh, even though I have a couple of choice words that start with F that I could go towards Grosjean. But yeah, I'll go C minus and
Definitely.
D plus.
All right, well, we're real close on this one too. I got K-Mag at a solid C. I expect more out of him. I think he's a better driver than what he's shown us in some races, and a better guy than what he showed us in Canada, that's for sure. And I think they got, a better car than what they've shown us too. So I'm really hoping Haas figures it out here, gets stronger as the year goes on. Maybe some upgrades could do him wonders. And really, like you said, the biggest thing is figuring out these tires, which pretty much every team seems to be struggling with, besides the Mercedes, of course, who must have some sort of secret handshake deal with
Yeah,
Pirelli
something
to
like
be getting
that.
the hookup. Yeah, but well, maybe we'll look more into that in a different episode once I get to the bottom of all that. But and Grosjean, I'm giving him the D plus. Kind of want to give him worse, but I don't want to kick the guy when he's down. So I think a D plus is fair for him. I haven't really heard anything about him, like maybe not being in Formula One anymore, but I'm kind of surprised by that because I don't know what the hell he's doing anymore.
No, I don't either. Is there another driver teammate combination that I think doesn't? I mean, these guys don't necessarily hate each other, but they don't mesh in any way, shape, or form. I mean, you
Yeah.
got Gunter is, if you watch Drive to Survive, and they may have edited that in a way that made it look a little bit worse than it could have been, but the relationship between him and Grosjean, it was sounded like it was pretty god awful last year. Magnussen has a horrible impact off the wall of champions and swings across the fence and smacks into the wall with, I think, something like a 56G impact last week. And Grosjean's right behind him and has no concern for his safety or anything else. He's just pissed the hell off that he ruined his lap. And then then the next day you've got K-Mag just going off on the radio about how this is the worst car he's ever driven in his life. And his poor race engineer is saying, like, yeah, man, we didn't like it either. We were up freaking all night long drinking coffee trying to put together this damn car again since you destroyed it. And obviously it kept on going on, going on, and Gunther had to tell him to shut up and cut it out. So I don't know, there's just the whole chemistry, everything seems off. And as much as I like Gunther, I don't know who's making the decisions on driver lineup. I don't know if it's our boy Gene from K-Town, Kannapolis, North Carolina, not too far from where I grew up. If it's him making these decisions and he's overruling Gunter, but something's got to happen. They've got to, the mojo's not there. It's time to switch it up. I don't care who it is, but somebody's got to go. It should be Grosjean. You've got some guys in F2 in their kind of academy over there. There's some other, you've got, again, it's a different, contract level, but you got guys like Ocon who's sitting there doing nothing. There's some guys that are sitting on the bench that could be in that seat instead of Grosjean. So I think regardless, they just need to mix it up come 2020, and make a change and see what happens. So.
Yeah, they need to do something different going into the next year for sure, or I'll be pretty disappointed.
So moving on to another team that we were talking about disappointing us in ninth place, but again, because of the nature of the best of the rest, they're not out of the picture by any stretch. 13 points for our boys Alpha, who got a hell of a lot of they got a large check from Ferrari last year, and things aren't panning out quite so well.
Yeah, I mean, Kimi. Started the year off decent, but he's kind of disappeared lately. And then Giovinazzi, really just struggling, honestly. I was kind of surprised by the qualifying numbers. Kimi's got the edge 5-2. I was surprised that Giovinazzi has found two different times to beat Raikkonen in qualifying. I think that might have something to do with Kimi just kind of, not caring at certain times,
Potentially.
maybe just being Kimi at times, but. The time differential for qualifying, Kimi's got him with a 1 minute 22 seconds 0.756, Giovinazzi being at a minute 23.025, so about 2.5 tenths there difference. Raikkonen starting at just outside of 13 at 13.29. Giovinazzi starting all the way outside the top 16 at 16.29. Räikkönen finishing almost two places ahead of where he starts at 11.43. And Giovinazzi actually same amount ahead, being at 14.43 where he finishes. So both of them 1.86 spots ahead of where they start the race. Räikkönen's crushing them in points, having 13. Giovinazzi with the big goose egg there to match the next team we'll talk about here in a minute. And then both of them have zero DNF. So I guess that's a bright spot as far as the reliability goes.
Yeah, I mean, if we had done this episode after, let's say, like race four, I probably would have been giving Kimi like an A minus somewhere in that range. At that point, I don't remember if it was race four to five, somewhere in there, he had a point streak going on. Every race he finished in the points, was dominating Gio in every single way. Things have changed the last couple of races, you know, to whatever it is, if Kimi's getting bored or, you know, if there's something going on with that team. So the last couple of races have made it a little bit more challenging for me to rank Kimi. I would say, gut instinct, I would give Kimi a, this feels a little generous, honestly, just based on the last couple of races. But if I look at big picture altogether, the fact that he's got all 13 points for the team, and kind of the level difference between the two, I'm gonna give him a B minus. Which again feels a little generous, but and then Gio, I'm gonna go with a D plus. I think that's gonna maybe my second largest swing so far between teammates. I don't know, what do you have?
Well, for Kimi, you know, thinking about it, the Iceman kind of reminds me of, you know, the sports team you like that's really good but likes to play down to its competition. You know, Kimi, I feel like, is like that with whatever car he's in, because if he's in a good car, he's going to give you a good performance. He's going to look like a world champion, which he is, and you know, he's going to go out there and do some things for you. But when he's in a car that doesn't have it, he's not the kind of driver that's going to get you the most out of a bad car. You know, he's not going to be like Max Verstappen this year, or I'm sure how Lewis has been in the past, or you know, even like a Fernando Alonso's been in the past with some cars that were underperforming, but then the driver really shined and made the difference there. So he's kind of disappointed me, especially after the decent start he had. So I'm just giving him a flat C. I feel like that's pretty generous. But I do love me some Kimi. I hope he does stick around for another year, just because, you know, some of the quotes we get out of him are pretty classic. My favorite being like my own mistake with the Racing Point and the Force India mistake, or whatever the F they're called these days. That one I'll remember for a while. I appreciated that one. But Giovinazzi, right on the head with me there. D plus for him. I feel like that's pretty generous. Yeah, he hasn't shown me anything. He's just like, to me, just the definition of a guy. You know, he's just there. I don't really get his purpose a lot of times, because he hasn't scored a single point. And I don't know if he will, you know.
Yeah, the more I think about it, I kind of want to change mine to like a D minus. Honestly, I don't want to give him quite an F, but unless I don't know if he's bringing a lot of money or something like that, but if he's in that seat next year, there's got to be something going on. You know, he's got some compromising pictures of somebody in the Alpha organization, or you know, Ferrari's top dog. He's got some blackmail on. I don't know what's going on, but he probably shouldn't have been there this year. He didn't show anything in his first stint in F1 for those couple of races. Yeah, he's been
And
completely non-existent.
last year he was like a Ferrari test driver, correct?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe Alfa needed a driver, and Ferrari's like, here, you can pick from our pile of scraps.
Well, if they're using the same simulator as Williams, the car probably drove great on the sim, and you know, he probably looked like a world champion in the making. So
Yeah, right.
maybe they had the same software patch or something like that. But yeah, I think I want to change him to a D minus now that we talk it out a little bit more.
All right, fair enough. I'll allow it.
And then, like last but not least, we're going to our boys in blue at Rocket Williams. What's the stats telling us on this one? This might be interesting.
Yeah, so another complete domination, but I consider Perez is a little bit better just because Russell is, I mean, Kubica might be worse than Stroll here.
Yeah.
Russell's completely dominating them, 7-0 in quali, with the time differential being Russell at minute 26.086 and Kubica being at minute 26.714. So over 6 tenths of a difference. That's the biggest gap between teammates when it comes to average qualifying time. So Russell, like I said, is just dominating them. The race start is pretty close, actually. Average position being 18.14 for Russell and 18.86 for Kubica, which isn't a surprise considering they're the worst cars on the grid. And then for race finish, Russell being 15.71, so just outside the top 15, and Kubica up to 17.14, which I think is just a testament to they get extra places when cars DNF and aren't able to finish the race are pretty much the only time that they're actually passing guys. Except was it? I think Russell might be the only one that actually passed a guy on merit, but I think that was Giovinazzi. So
Yeah,
how much is that really
I
even say?
think there's definitely been one, maybe two races. Was it Monaco maybe as well that he passed someone on merit? Maybe that was Giovinazzi they passed, but I want to say there might be two races where he's actually passed one car. And Kubica is generally, I don't know, they seem to be doing a lot of extra pit stops on that team. I don't know if Homeboy just can't say the tires and he just destroying tires left and right or what's going on.
Well, I think that's probably how Williams is getting the fastest pit lap award. They get the most practice.
Oh, that's a good point. I mean, two seconds flat last week's pretty impressive, but and it's, coincidentally, I think the last couple of weeks that they've won that award, it has been a Kubica pit stop that's done it. So maybe you're onto something there.
You go.
So this one's tough. Like, I really like Russell. I think the kid's got a lot of talent. It's hard because he's in complete garbage, and I'm pretty sure if you put Lewis in that car, he'd finish higher than Russell, but I don't know by how much, given their current state. So, I want to give Russell like an A minus.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't know. It's tough because, again, the car is such crap. And I'm like, I keep telling my brain, like, remove that from the picture and just look at how he's been comparative to his teammate. He's obviously, if there was any driver in that team that's going to get points, clearly going to be him. He's usually only one or two laps off the pace versus Kubica's at least three. It seems like every single, I don't know, I think that. He's one of those drivers that if you put him in a decent car, I think he would be like an Albon or a Norris. I think he's got equal talent with both those guys. And I think he would impress us tremendously. I'd love to see him kick Bottas out of here and see him with Lewis in a year or so. I don't know if it's going to happen with, it's a lot of politics involved, but he is a Mercedes boy true and through. So I gotta imagine that they're gonna want to get him in at least a decent seat. Racing Point would have been a good option there, but they've got issues, obviously. So yeah, I don't know. It sounds crazy, I know. This one gave me probably the hardest heartburn on trying to figure out, but I'm gonna go with an A minus. I'm gonna go a little crazy. And then the flip side, is there such a thing as an F minus? Can you give an F minus? Does that count or does it stop at F? I don't know where the absolute lowest grade is.
Well, I'm pretty sure it's our podcast, so you can do
Well,
whatever
in
you
that
want.
case, I'm gonna give him a Z minus. Yeah, Kvitz just sucks, man. We talked about it in on our the prior podcast, several episodes back, and it was a great story. I know the Polish people love them, and they show up, and they have these giant banners, and they're all for him. And it was a great storyline, the comeback, and the overcoming the injury, and so on and so forth. And it was great publicity for the team, but I said it before, and I'll say it again for this driver. Damn, because the guy just doesn't have it. And Russell, rookie, never driven an F1 car before, basically this year. You put the two together, and Russell, even though on position wise they're pretty close comparative to each other on track, time wise usually Russell is at least a lap to 2 laps sometimes ahead of Kubica on pace. So Kubica sucks, man. I'm gonna go Z minus for boy right there.
Fair enough. And but like exactly the point you're making though about how bad Kubica is why I can't grade Russell much higher than I did, because if he was dominating any other driver on the grid as his teammate like he is Kubica, well then okay, like I'm down with giving him an A minus whatever, but like his competition is awful.
So
So it's hard.
you're gonna negatively curve him just because Kubica is so awful that it brings down the whole curve.
I mean, it kind of does. Like, Kubica is like a black hole of just awfulness. And like, I'm giving Russell a C because I think off the track he says the right things. He acts the right way. Like the kid knows he's in a shitty position, and it's just a good chance for him to be in Formula One and get the experience. And like, I can't even imagine how frustrating it is for him. To have all that talent and have had previous success in other leagues and whatnot and levels of racing, to be in like the situation he's in now. And like, you can't bash the team you're on, obviously, because that's going to look really bad on you and all that. But so he does the right things, says the right things. He looks good on track. That race in Monaco was definitely his F1 career highlight so far. He finished in 15th ahead of Lance Stroll, Kimi Raikkonen, Kubica, and Giovinazzi, of those people that actually finished. And of course, that's the only time Kubica finished ahead of somebody on track, being Giovinazzi. But I just can't give the kid more than a C right now. I think very soon he's going to be much better than that. And I think given a chance on an actual functioning team, he could really be something. So I got nothing against the kid. It's just I'm not going to give him anything more than a C because, I mean, he's like beaten up on no competition at all. It's like giving somebody an A when you're, an MLB hitter going up against a little league pitcher or something. Like, it's just not even close and fair for Kubica. So, Kubica, I'm giving him an F minus. Like, I got nothing to say about him. Like you said, great story. That story should have ended with the lights going out in Melbourne. Back in March.
Yeah.
And then since then it's tough to watch at times, So good for him to come back, but I don't see a place for him in the sport moving forward past this year.
It's funny because this is clearly the worst team on the grid, but it's the one that we've been pretty close together, half grade, quarter of a grade off from each other, pretty much this whole way. It's funny that the worst team on the grid is the one that splits us the most. But I mean, yeah, I agree with your points that it's hard to see what he's actually capable of when you compare it to such garbage on the other side of the garage, but. It's one of those situations where it's like, what more could he do? I think he's gotten everything that that car could possibly get and probably then some out of it. And Monaco is actually one of the reasons why I upped him a little bit in my grading, because Monaco is kind of one of those driver tracks that you don't have to have the best aero in the world, and you definitely don't have to have horsepower to win there and be successful there. And he looked good. I mean, that was a highlight of his career. So he was like, you put them all in like an equal playing field where it's just like a mush of, it doesn't take the best of this and doesn't take the best of that. And he did decently well and outperformed some other drivers with, quote unquote, better equipment. So yeah, Monaco is one of the reasons why I actually bumped him from like a B to an A. But I see your point. That curve's killing him. I'd be pissed if this was school and I was him, and I lost my A because everyone else in the class sucked horribly. But I get your point.
Yeah, you actually saying that, like talking about Monaco being kind of fair and more of an even playing field because, you know, the aerodynamics and the power unit don't make too much of a difference on that track. It's like I think it'd be so interesting if instead of like an all-star break or something, kind of like how a lot of leagues have a break in the middle of the year, if, you know, they had the drivers get together on a specific track and they all had the exact same car or something and then let them go racing like that. Or even if it was like they went karting, you know, and had the exact same gold card. I think that'd be really interesting to see and a lot of fun to watch.
Well, you know, like in F1 2018, they had those invitational events. It would be cool to, you know, it'll never happen, but it would be cool to see modern F1 drivers and like all jumping in historic F1 cars
Oh,
that
that'd be
are
sweet.
relatively balanced and paced and let them go at it. That would be cool. So I'd pay a large sum of money to go see that for sure. Some V12 screaming
Yeah,
down the road
definitely.
with Vettel and Lewis and Leclerc and all these guys. That would be cool.
Definitely.
So we gave our gratings. Like I said, we were pretty close along the way for the most part. We had a couple of our close listeners who have followed us for the last few months emailed in, and we actually had a call in here in a minute. But so y'all read he sent us an email a while back, and he responded to our Twitter question this week about kind of give us your, you know, as a fan of your drivers, who would you give? So kind of looking through Yared's rankings here, you know, he's pretty in line with us across the board. I think Leclerc, he gives a C for. I think that I was a little surprised by that, but again, I think he may be suffering from the curve of the last couple of races. He did the same thing probably we did. It's hard to ignore the last couple of weeks because it's the freshest stuff. And then I think the only one that I disagree with you, Yared, I love you sending stuff in, but the only one I gotta disagree with is Grosjean of the C. I think that seems generous to me, but I don't know. What are your thoughts, James?
I'm thinking maybe we're talking to one of the few Grosjean fans in the world right now.
Hey, you know, America needs all the fans that we can get. We appreciate it.
Yeah,
So for a variety of reasons, we'll take any gratefulness that we can get these days.
you're right about that.
And then he gave his points, or excuse me, his team rankings as well. And you know, we didn't really cover that, but I think he's pretty much in line with everybody that we probably would have thought as well. You know, the only one that may be a little bit controversial is potentially Ferrari at a C. Yeah, I can see his points there. It's they're underperforming, but hey, they are in second place. So that one was probably the only one that may be a little bit controversial one way or the other, but I can see his points there. Just
Definitely. I think after certain races and certain strategies decisions, I totally agree with him on that C for sure.
yep. And then we had a good friend of the show, Nick Keller from the F1 and Coffee podcast. We recently connected with those guys, and they're putting on a pretty cool thing where they record live during the races, which is pretty neat to hear. And they're up at the same time we are at 3 o'clock in the morning, so we might have to do a little collaboration one of these days and call in on their show as well. But he sent in, he's got Sebastian at a C, which is a little surprising, but again, going back to those mistakes, I could see why I put that in there. Ricciardo at a B plus. I don't remember where we were at, but I don't think we were too far off from that. Max
Nope.
at an A, we both agree on that, and then Lewis is an
Yep.
A. Yeah, regardless of your B plus 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 whatever garbage, I think that's a solid number. So Nick, I appreciate you calling in. And
Yeah, I'm gonna
then
have to talk to him about a recommendation for this Sunday because I'm pretty sure this is gonna be an F1 coffee weekend here with the 8:10 start.
yeah, if you guys have anything, any special brews, or something to add into that brew to pipe up the morning a little bit, definitely send our way and we'll pass it on. And then we had a call in, so I wanted to go ahead and play this. So Dean from the Regen E podcast, these guys are going into pretty cool stuff. They're very similar to us in regard as a couple of guys who love racing, but they've gone down the Formula E path, which I'm a fan of Formula E. I watch it. To me, it doesn't compare to F1 just because of the tracks and limitations. But these guys, they bring a lot of passion to the show, and they so check them out if you have interest in Formula E and you want to know more about the technical side of things. Want to get race reviews? Check out those guys are doing a great job over there. But Dean, let's play your audio now and see what you think of your rankings.
Hi, at Lap F1 Podcast. Just getting back to you on the Twitter question, how you would grade your favorite driver from A to F. I would give Valtteri Bottas a B+. I think he's been good this season. I think he's stuck with Hamilton a bit better. He's only about 30 points behind, 30 points in front of Vettel. He's had three pole positions at least that I can remember: China, Azerbaijan, and Spain. And I think it's going to be very telling over the next wee while whether he can stick with Hamilton, especially after the break, which we know Hamilton finds another level. So, yeah, thank you for putting this out there, and hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Yeah, I think clearly you're a Boats House fan, so I give you credit for that. I think I don't. Where did we rank Boats House? You remember it? So at a B plus, again, he was one of those ones that I thought it was a bigger distance between it on paper, but when James shared out the stats, you're right. It's actually pretty damn close between him and Lewis. He's definitely had the pace, at least on Saturday, quite a few times now. And I, to your point, Hamilton kicks into, high gear. He drops it into sixth gear, come after the summer break, and tends to pull away with things. I hope for the sake of the championship. I mean, it's not going to break my heart to see Lewis get another trophy to add to the shelf, but I hope for the sake of the sport that at least Bottas keeps it interesting. At least Dakota, because we're going to Dakota as a group. So I hope at least through there, the championship is still in fight and
Definitely.
Bottas is still fighting in. Unfortunately, I would have loved Seb or Leclerc to be in that fight, and who knows, maybe something will happen. Maybe the Gen 2 Mercedes engine will crap out on everybody and they'll get them back in there somehow. But yeah,
Fingers crossed.
you bring up great points, Deanna, about Lewis kicking it in and pulling away with things. So we'll see what happens and we'll see how it plays out. But yeah, thanks so much to you, and definitely check out the F1 and Coffee podcast. And if you're a Formula E guy or you want to get into Formula E, learn a little bit more about it, check out that Regen E podcast as well. So thanks so much to you
Yeah, for
guys.
sure. Yeah, no, there. Thank you from me, from everybody that called in and sent some messages in. It's always fun to see other people's opinions and get them included on the show and helping spread these Formula One podcasts.
Yeah, we're all kind of in the same boat. We're just fans who love racing and love F1, and so it's cool as hell that we can connect with you guys and get your opinions, whether we agree or disagree. Sounds like we pretty much all agree in line so far through seven races, but we'll definitely have to do this again in a few weeks' time as we hit race 14 or so. All right. So, anything else you want to cover tonight? I know we've got a cool preview coming up later this week, and then obviously we got a race review come Sunday that we'll drop to you guys early next week. So, but anything else for tonight?
No, I'm excited to get into another race weekend here and get that race preview out to you all, and then a race review. Hopefully, we got a nice, exciting one. Hopefully, a Charles Leclerc victory, but I'm sure we'll get more into that during the preview. And until then, have a good night and talk to you soon.
Yep. Take care, guys. Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Outlap F1 podcast. If you like what you heard, click that subscribe button, leave us a 5-star review, and please tell your friends. If you'd like to connect with us outside of the show, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at OutlapF1 Podcast or email us at outlapf1@gmail.com. Until next time, have a great night, and thanks again as always for your support.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.